Attention citizens, beware the zombie plague. All deceased must be burned within 6 minutes of death to prevent reanimation. Such is the stark warning plastered on Imperial city walls in times of peril. In the grim darkness of the far future, even death is no release, for a dreadful contagion stalks humanity, one that turns the loss of hope into literal living death. They call it the curse of unbelief. This malady doesn't just kill, it reanimates. It transforms ordinary men, women, and children into shambling, ravenous corpses. In a galaxy perpetually at war, where despair runs rampant, the curse of unbelief has become one of the most horrifying threats imaginable. And yet, its story remains strangely obscure, buried in fear and suppression. The curse of unbelief, also grimly known as the zombie plague, is no ordinary disease. It is a warp-spawned horror, a plague born of chaos and nourished by human despair. In this documentary account, we will delve into the origins of this unholy infection, witness the terrifying progression of its victims, revisit notorious outbreaks throughout history, and explore how humanity's defenders have struggled to combat a foe that is, quite literally, their own dead. Prepare yourself for a journey into one of the darkest chapters of the Imperium, a tale of faith and hopelessness, of life, death, and the nightmare that lies beyond it. Origins of a warp-born plague. The curse of unbelief did not emerge from nature's fickle experiments, nor from some lab or rad zone mishap. Its origin is far more malevolent. By all accounts, this plague is a creation of chaos, specifically a gift from the plague lord Nurgle, the chaos god of disease and decay. Through arcane sorcery and malefic bioengineering, Nurgle's servants crafted a pathogen that defies the laws of biology. It is said to be a fusion of a physical virus and a warp-based curse, intertwining the mundane and the supernatural. The result? A disease that infects not just the body, but the soul. What truly sets the zombie plague apart is its cruel selectiveness. It only truly takes root in those who are consumed by despair, in mortals who have lost all hope and faith. In a bitter twist of irony, lack of faith isn't just a spiritual dilemma in the Imperium. It can make you physically vulnerable. The downtrodden, the fearful, the ones who have given up, they are the ones most at risk of contracting this plague, hence the name Curse of Unbelief. It strikes hardest at those who no longer believe they will see the light of tomorrow. In the brutal reality of Imperial life, with its endless wars and oppressive regimes, that describes an alarmingly large portion of the population. Nurgle could not have asked for richer feeding grounds. Human misery is his playground. No one knows exactly when or where Nurgle first unleashed this particular contagion. Some scholars postulate that the plague might even be an unintended byproduct of ancient experiments. Whispers persist that the technology of the Golden Throne, the life-sustaining device of the Emperor of Mankind, has parallels with the plague's effects. Indeed, inquisitors of the Thorian faction have noted disturbing similarities between the warp energy reanimation of plague victims and the warp-based preservation of the Emperor's dying body. Could it be that long ago, in the dark corners of the galaxy, heretical tech priests of the Dark Mechanicum attempted to imitate the Emperor's miracle and instead birthed a nightmare? It remains speculation, but the mere thought that the curse of unbelief might be an unintended mirror of the Emperor's salvation is enough to send shivers down the spine of any faithful Imperial citizen. What is certain is that by the time the Imperium became aware of this plague, it was already spreading insidiously through the galaxy's vulnerable fringes. As a warp-infused pathogen, it laughs at conventional containment. It is not constrained by the usual limits of time, space, or reason. In the warp, emotion is power, and despair is the plague's invitation. Wherever the influence of chaos seeps through, wherever hope fades, the curse can take hold. It might begin with a single spore carried on a contaminated blade, or the wicked prayer of a Nurgle cultist in a hive's depths. But once it roots itself in a population, the plague moves with a hideous life of its own. A disease of body and soul. To understand the true horror of the curse of unbelief, one must see what it does to its victims. The physical progression of the zombie plague is as grotesque as any nightmare of old night. It starts subtly, almost innocently, as if the disease enjoys giving its victims false hope. In the earliest stage, a newly infected person just feels off. A wave of nausea, bouts of dizziness, perhaps strange spots dancing at the edge of vision. Their complexion grows pallid, a sickly gray-green hue overtakes the skin, and small greenish scabs or sores might surface seemingly at random. An observant medici or loved one might notice these signs and think the patient has a common fever or a mild poisoning. Nothing that signals the doom to come. But already, even in this stage, the victim has become a walking vector of the plague. The pathogen, both virus and curse, saturates their bodily fluids. A single drop of blood, a single mingling of saliva, can carry the infection to a new host. The clock is now ticking, and most don't even know it. As the disease progresses to stage two, the outward signs become harder to dismiss. The skin tightens and hardens unnaturally, almost like a corpse beginning to mummify, causing veins to bulge in dark, web-like patterns across the body. Hair falls out in clumps as the scalp itself starts to wither. Patches of viridian scabbing spread across the flesh, as if the body is decaying while still alive. By this point, any cure, if such a thing were possible, is far out of reach. The infection has done more than invade the body. It has sunk its claws into the mind. Victims in this stage lose touch with reality. Their personalities erode under waves of hunger and confusion. Perhaps they have moments of lucidity, brief terror at what's happening to them, but those moments grow scarce as an uncontrollable craving sets in. It is an unnatural hunger, not for sustenance, but for living flesh. The infected's sanity teeters on a knife's edge. Many devolve into violence at this stage, lashing out at those around them as the curse corrupts their very instincts. By stage three, any pretense that the victim is merely ill is gone. The person effectively becomes a walking corpse in appearance. Imagine a man or woman you once knew, now transformed, cheeks sunken and hollow, eyes milky or jaundiced, lips drawn back into a deathly rictus. Their skin turns bone white or ashen gray, stretched a taut over protruding bones and sinew. Large swathes of their flesh are rotting even as they move. The skin sloughs off in places, revealing leaking, pus-filled ulcers and gangrenous wounds beneath. The stench of decay surrounds them. Teeth might fall out or protrude at odd angles as gums recede. At this point, huge portions of the body are essentially dead tissue, no longer sustained by any normal metabolic process. And yet, horrifyingly, the victim is still alive in some sense. They can still move, still perceive, and still suffer. The warp's dark power, channeled through the plague, puppeteers their remaining life force, keeping them in a state of undeath that is neither fully alive nor truly dead. Stage four is the final, dreadful transformation, the point of no return where the plague victim is now truly a plague zombie. All semblance of humanity vanishes. The infection has extinguished all life processes. By any medical definition, the person is dead. No pulse, no breathing, no thoughts. The brain has likely been reduced to so much rotten mush. And yet, the body moves. The corpse rises again, animated by the warp itself, by the sorceress virus that now acts as a parasite puppeting the flesh. What shuffles forth is a mindless, walking corpse, driven by only one remaining impulse, to feed on the living and propagate the infection. In this final stage, the physical integrity of the body is collapsing rapidly. The undead creature is literally falling apart. Clawed hands leave bits of skin on every scratch. Limbs might break or tear off from simple exertion. Black blood oozes sluggishly through half-clotted veins that no longer truly pump. They are often called simply zombies now, as folklore and nightmare have become reality. These zombies often gather together in swarms, drawn to each other by some vestige of collective hunger. They will instinctively seek out any life forms not yet infected, be it humans, animals, possibly even xenos, and attempt to devour them. A single bite or even a scratch laden with their infected gore can doom a victim to the same fate. One grim discovery quickly made by anyone fighting these abominations is that normal combat tactics don't always apply. A plague zombie does not feel pain, does not fear injury, and will not stop until its body is literally unable to move. Vital shots to the torso are useless, as the undead have no functioning organs to shock or shut down. Many a rookie guardsman has emptied laser gun charges into a zombie's center of mass, only to be tackled by a husk that should, by all rights, be dead. The only sure way to neutralize a plague zombie is to destroy the brain or sever the head from the body, effectively disrupting whatever warp energy puppetry animates it. As a result, seasoned fighters resort to brutal measures, headshots, decapitations, burning the bodies to ash. The earlier Imperial propaganda warning about burning corpses within 6 minutes is not hyperbole. Any delay and your former comrade might be clawing at your throat moments later. On battlefields touched by the curse of unbelief, flamer units and chainswords become the soldiers' best friends. If all this sounds like a scene from a pulp horror vid, rest assured, it's all too real in the Imperium. In fact, the archetypal zombie of ancient Terran legend has nothing on Nurgle's iteration. These plague zombies are tough. Conventional wisdom and desperate battlefield experience holds that only total physical destruction will stop them. Short of blowing off limbs or incinerating them, a zombie will keep dragging itself forward, even as a limbless torso with a gnashing mouth. There are accounts of Imperial troopers unloading dozens of rounds, or hacking a zombie to pieces, only to find twitching parts still trying to move. As one fatigued space marine quipped long ago, "Throne, don't they ever stop? I must have killed 100 or more of the damned things." His battle brother grimly answered, "You probably keep killing the same one. If you don't destroy the head, they get back up again." A simple, horrific truth. If you don't finish a plague zombie properly, it will rise again and again. There is no mercy in it, no release for the tormented soul inside. Early encounters and dark whispers. Although the curse of unbelief truly rose to prominence in the modern era, there are whisperings of its influence stretching far back in Imperial history. Indeed, the first documented instances of what we now recognize as plague zombies date all the way back to the end of the Great Crusade, just before the galaxy was engulfed in the Horus Heresy. These early accounts are fragmentary. Half-forgotten logs, personal journals, mythologized retellings, but they paint a chilling picture. One famous incident took place on the moon of Davin, a feral world in the Davin system. It was here that Warmaster Horus, the Emperor's favored son, would later be wounded and corrupted. But in the lead-up to that tragedy, an entire battle was fought in the swamps of Davin's moon, the Luna Wolves Space Marine Legion. Later known as the Sons of Horus, assaulted this moon, expecting to put down a simple rebellion by a primitive tribe and their priests. Instead, they encountered something out of a nightmare. As they advanced through the mud and fog, the Astartes found themselves beset by shambling figures that did not fall when shot. Warriors reported enemies that kept fighting despite suffering mortal wounds. Corpses littering the battlefield suddenly stirred and grabbed at the living. The Lunar Wolves realized they were up against a plague of undead. In a harrowing close-quarters struggle, they burned and hacked their way through hordes of reanimated corpses. It was during this fight that the exchange about destroying the head was born, as even transhuman space marines had to adapt on the fly to a foe that simply refused to die. Many Imperial historians now believe that the Davin's Moon incident was a brush with the very curse of unbelief. Chaos testing this foul weapon on the Emperor's own warriors at the dawn of the heresy. If true, it means the galaxy's first encounter with the zombie plague coincided with the first great betrayal, as if an omen of the dark days to come. It wouldn't be the last. In the millennia after, references to restless corpses and plague zombies crop up sporadically, usually in the context of chaos cult activity or unexplained contagions on far-flung worlds. During the long centuries of the Imperium's history, especially in times of widespread turmoil, there were always rumors. An isolated colony where an entire settlement died and yet walked again. Or a void ship found adrift with its crew mangled and half-eaten, the culprits assumed to be the crew themselves risen from the grave. These accounts were often dismissed as superstition or Xenos influence. Only in hindsight, as knowledge of the curse of unbelief became codified, did the Inquisition realize that many of these tales were in fact early outbreaks of the zombie plague. But such recognition came far too late for the victims. The plague in the 41st millennium. It was in the late 41st millennium that the curse of unbelief truly exploded into the awareness of the wider Imperium. By this era, humanity was beset by endless war and chaos incursions. The Chaos Gods, sensing weakness, were unleashing all manner of horrors. Nurgle, in particular, seemed eager to let his zombie plague off the leash. What follows are some of the most notorious outbreaks and uses of the plague in relatively recent history, grim case studies in how devastating this curse can be. Hydra Minoris, a world in quarantine. In the year 757 M41, the prosperous hive world of Hydra Minoris became the stage for a nightmare. Hydra Minoris was a heavily populated planet, home to tens of billions, and an important industrial center in its sector. Life there was harsh but stable under Imperial rule. That changed when Typhus, the Herald of Nurgle, one of Nurgle's most feared champions, chose Hydra Minoris as a target for his evil craft. Typhus, a Chaos Space Marine Lord of the Death Guard, carried within him Nurgle's worst plagues, and he delighted in spreading them from world to world. Under the cover of a chaotic invasion, or perhaps a stealth infiltration, accounts vary, Typhus and his plague marines penetrated the planet's defenses and reached the heart of Hydra Minoris's primary hive city. Once there, they unleashed the curse of unbelief in its purest form. Some say Typhus himself broke open an ancient sealed casket gifted by Nurgle, releasing a cloud of contagion into the hive's atmosphere. Others claim a cult within the hive had already been brewing the disease, and Typhus's arrival was the final catalyst that ensured the contagion would run wild. The effect was immediate and catastrophic. Within days, a mysterious sickness gripped the population of the hive. Medicare reports from the first week note, patients with unusual symptoms, gray skin, unresponsive to treatment, sudden violent behavior. Panic spread faster than the plague at first. People feared it was a new strain of the weeping or some other known hive illness. The truth became evident soon enough when the recently deceased refused to stay dead. Entire habitation blocks went silent, only to erupt in frenzy as hordes of undead workers and hive gangers swarmed through, feasting on their screaming neighbors. Enforcers who went in to restore order found themselves overwhelmed by masses of people that gunfire alone couldn't stop. One by one, the lights in the underhive sections flickered out. Hydra Minoris was dying. The Imperium's response, while swift, was utterly merciless. Recognizing that a warp plague was on the loose, and with great fear that it could be borne off-world by ships or refugees, the Segmentum authorities made a grim decision: quarantine. The Imperial Navy enforced a blockade around Hydra Minoris. All traffic to and from the planet was interdicted under threat of immediate destruction. No one was allowed to leave the world, not even uninfected citizens. In effect, Hydra Minoris and its population were sealed off to die. To the bureaucrats and admirals, it was cold logic. Better to lose one world than risk the plague spreading to a dozen more. But the human cost was almost unthinkable. Over 23 billion souls were trapped on the surface, alongside an ever-growing tide of hungry and mindless undead. Those uninfected survivors, tens of billions of terrified men, women, and children, were left with an impossible fight for survival or a slow, inevitable doom. Some managed to hide out in sealed bunkers or upper spire holdouts for a time, watching their world burn and decay beneath them. There are fragmented Vox transmissions from Hydra Minoris during those days that still circulate as cautionary tales. Pleas for rescue, prayers to the Emperor for deliverance, screams as secure zones fell to internal outbreaks. One infamous recording features an Imperial governor's final message: "May the Emperor forgive us for what we have done. We tried to contain it. They're everywhere. The dead. Emperor, save my soul." The message ends with wet, tearing sounds and silence. In time, Hydra Minoris went completely dark. Whether any pockets of life remained deep in hidden refuges is unknown, but for official purposes, the world was written off. To this day, the quarantine of Hydra Minoris stands as one of the most draconian, if tragically effective, measures taken against the curse of unbelief. It demonstrates the cruel calculus the Imperium is prepared to use: an entire planet sacrificed, billions killed either by the plague or by starvation and isolation, all to prevent a greater spread. The husk of Hydra Minoris still exists, and theoretically, if the curse burned itself out, once no more living hosts remained, the planet could be recolonized. But few have the stomach to ever go back. It's likely a haunted, poisoned globe of decaying cities and wandering dead, left to rot in the void, a permanent warning to the rest of humanity. The plague in the underhive. The curse of unbelief isn't only found on battlefields or in massive planetary outbreaks. It also festers in the forgotten, neglected corners of human civilization, places rife with misery where it can quietly take root. Perhaps the most notorious example is the world of Necromunda, particularly the rancid depths of its hive cities. Necromunda is a planet entirely covered in megacities, with billions living in tiered hives that reach both miles into the sky and miles into the ground. The rich and powerful live at the spire tops, while the bottom of the hives, the underhive, is a lawless, lightless realm of gangs, mutants, waste, and despair. It's said that in some underhive zones, people live their whole lives knee-deep in toxic sludge and never see the sun. Hope is a scarce commodity there, faith often replaced by brutality or apathy. In other words, prime feeding grounds for the curse of unbelief. It's unclear exactly when the zombie plague first appeared in Necromunda's underhives, but over the years it has repeatedly flared up. Hive quakes or structural collapses occasionally unearth ancient tunnels filled with ghastly surprises. Pockets of plague zombies sealed away from some forgotten past, now stumbling into new hunting grounds. Other times, an infected hive ganger from off-world might bring the curse in unknowingly, sparking an underhive epidemic. The local conditions then do the rest. In the crowded, unsanitary depths, the infection spreads like wildfire. Whole domes and settlements in the underhive can fall silent, only to be overrun by moaning hordes days later. One figure looms large in the legend of Necromundan plague outbreaks, Carloth Valois, also known as the Zombie Master of Necromunda. Carloth Valois was once a wretched hive scummer, a man of little consequence, except that he was born a latent psyker with an unfortunate knack for hearing the whispers of the warp. Driven half mad by nightmares, Carloth ended up wandering the absolute lowest levels of the hive, the toxic sump areas where few dare tread. It was here that fate, or the plague lord's hand, intervened. Carloth was attacked by a pack of plague zombies prowling those lightless tunnels. Cornered and savaged, he was bitten multiple times, a death sentence by any measure. The zombies began feasting on his flesh, and Carloth felt the infection flooding his veins. He should have died and risen as just another mindless ghoul. But Carloth's nascent psychic power reacted in that desperate moment. Teetering between life and undeath, he touched the simple, hunger-driven minds of the zombie pack and, miraculously, bent them to his will. For the first time, it seems, a human being wrested control of Nurgle's cursed children. Carloth Valois did not succumb to the plague in the normal way. He became a living half-dead anomaly, infected but not a mindless zombie, sustained by siphoning the life force of the zombies he controlled. In mastering the undead, he halted his own final death at the brink. Over time, he found that the plague's curse had twisted his psychic abilities. He could telepathically communicate with plague zombies, herding them like animals. He could dim their eternal hunger or sharpen it to a frenzy. And to sustain himself, Carloth learned to drain the life energy of the living as a vampire might, because regular food or drink no longer nourished his corrupted form. Empowered and embittered, Carloth Valois rose from being a victim to a would-be underhive warlord. He gathered packs of plague zombies under his control and terrorized settlements, extorting supplies and loyalty from underhive gangs in exchange for directing the zombies elsewhere. Over years, his legend grew. Mothers would frighten naughty children with tales that Carloth and his zombies would come for them if they didn't behave. Eventually, Carloth's depredations drew the attention of the powerful. A fanatical cult known as the Redemption, noted for their red robes and zealous hatred of witches and mutants, declared a crusade to purge the Necromundan nightmares. The ensuing conflict was straight out of a horror holovid. Redemptionist fire teams armed with flamers and fury, delving into the dark, fighting hordes of undead in pitch battle deep below Hive City foundations. Carloth's zombie legion clashed with the Redemptionists in a battle at a precipice known only as the Abyss, a chasm so deep no one sees the bottom. Waves of zombies threw themselves at the flame-spewing Redeemers. The zealots, chanting prayers and litanies of faith, incinerated scores of the undead, filling the air with the cloying smell of burning rot. Carloth himself waded into battle, using his powers to sap the life from his enemies, even as his zombies tore into them. It was a brutal, macabre showdown between death and fanaticism. In the end, even Carloth's formidable powers couldn't stop the sheer conviction of the Redemption. As his forces were cut down and cornered, Carloth chose a dark escape over capture. With a final curse shouted at his pursuers, he hurled himself into the abyss. His body was never recovered. Perhaps he was vaporized in some toxic sump far below, or perhaps, as Underhive rumor insists, he still wanders the depths, too stubborn to dig, waiting to rise again. The tale of Carloth Valois underscores a terrifying fact. The curse of unbelief is not only a disease, but can also be weaponized by those cunning or desperate enough. In the Underhives, plague zombies are sometimes deliberately used as shock troops or living, unliving weapons. There are reports of renegade tech rites in Necromunda fashioning crude explosive collars on zombies, turning them into undead suicide bombs to unleash on rival gang strongholds. It's a chaotic, unpredictable weapon, one that can backfire spectacularly if the zombies slip control. But in the grim lawlessness of Hive Bottom, such depravity is just another Tuesday. The Siege of Vrax, when the dead won't die. On a far larger scale, the zombie plague has been employed as a weapon of war by chaos forces. A notorious example came during the long and bloody Siege of Vrax. Vrax was an imperial armory world that fell into corruption and rebellion, sparking a grinding siege between the forces of the Imperium and traitor renegades that lasted 17 terrible years. As the war on Vrax dragged on, the battlefields became literally piled with corpses. Trenches crisscrossed the planet's surface, and the no man's lands were filled with the dead of both sides. It was a perfect canvas for Nurgle's art. Enter the Apostles of Contagion, a Chaos Space Marine war band splintered from the Death Guard Legion. Led by a malefic sorcerer known as Necrosius, the Apostles of Contagion were devoted to Nurgle and experts in spreading his foul plagues. They saw in Vrax an opportunity to break the stalemate and gift Nurgle a massive harvest of souls. Secretly, under cover of night and toxic fog, the apostles infiltrated the battle zones and introduced the zombie plague into the corpse-choked mud. Some accounts suggest they performed dark rituals in mass graves or released contaminated phage bombs into areas thick with unburied bodies. The effect was as sudden as it was devastating. The dead on Vrax began to rise. Imagine the plight of the Imperial Guard soldiers on the line, exhausted, nerves frayed, watching the enemy trenches when suddenly a low moan rises from all around. From shell craters and charnel pits, from beneath piles of their fallen comrades, shapes begin to stir. Guardsmen who died days ago of artillery fire or disease claw their way out of the muck, eyes rolled back, entrails dangling, and they shamble toward the living with hungry intent. One can only fathom the mix of horror and heartache to see the face of a friend, a brother in arms you mourned, now coming at you with empty eyes and bloodstained teeth. The Apostles of Contagion had turned Vrax into a nightmare front, where every fallen soldier potentially became a new enemy. The Imperial lines buckled under the onslaught. How do you fight an enemy that only swells in number the more casualties you take? Panic spread, and with panic, despair, ironically fueling the plague further as more soldiers lost hope and thus became susceptible. It was only through the timely intervention of the Inquisition's experts and the sheer bloody-minded resolve of certain veteran units that Vrax didn't completely collapse that day. Flamethrower teams scoured the trenches, burning anything that moved among the piles of dead. The Imperial forces learned to preempt the curse by gathering and incinerating corpses wherever possible, a grim task in the middle of battle, to be sure. Snipers were instructed to aim for the head on any shambling figure, friend or foe. Still, the damage was done. The Apostles of Contagion had significantly weakened the defenders and sown terror in their ranks. Vrax would eventually fall, but not before this incident cost the Imperium dearly in lives and sanity. In the aftermath, it was noted by Imperial strategists that the zombie plague had effectively acted as an extra wave of attackers coordinated by chaos, one that required no supply lines and knew no fear. This lesson was not lost on others. The Black Crusade and the Galaxy Aflame. Even the calamity of Vrax was but a prelude to a far greater plague outbreak that would shake the galaxy. The events surrounding the 13th Black Crusade and the opening of the Great Rift. The 13th Black Crusade was the most massive chaos invasion of the Imperium since the Heresy, launched by Abaddon the Despoiler in late M41. As the forces of chaos surged out of the Eye of Terror, they attacked Cadia and dozens of surrounding systems in the Segmentum Obscurus. It was the perfect storm for the curse of unbelief to thrive. Indeed, before the Black Crusade even fully commenced, reports of the zombie plague began to multiply on worlds near the Eye of Terror. It was as if Nurgle decided to soften the battlefield in advance, sowing terror and confusion. At the forefront of this sickly tide was once again Typhus, herald of Nurgle. While Abaddon led the main armies in head-on assaults, Typhus spearheaded what were called the Plague Fleets, flotillas of pestilence that slipped into systems ahead of the Black Crusade's vanguard. Typhus brought the curse of unbelief with him like an ever-ready tool. One by one, vulnerable planets found themselves host to sudden outbreaks. Often it began with small incidents. An asteroid miner on some moon coughs up black blood and collapses, or a pilgrim ship arriving at a shrine world carries an unwitting infected passenger. These seeds would quickly bloom into full-blown pandemics at the worst possible time. Just when the Imperial Navy, or Astra Militarum forces, mobilized to face a chaos invasion, their rear lines and civilian populations would explode in internal crisis as the zombie plague reared up. It was the ultimate act of biological warfare, unleash the enemy's own dead against them to distract and destabilize, right as the real invasion hits. Cadia itself, the stalwart fortress world guarding the Eye, was not spared the scare. Though Cadia's fall came primarily through brute force and overwhelming numbers, propaganda posters like the one quoted in our introduction appeared all over Cadia's cities during the war, stark reminders to the citizens and troops to burn their dead immediately. Clearly, the plague was present enough to warrant such measures, or at least the threat was taken seriously. The disciplined Cadians managed to avoid a large-scale zombie infestation. They had enough on their hands with the planet literally breaking apart. But elsewhere, the story was different. Numerous Imperial worlds fell to chaos during the 13th Black Crusade, and in many, the curse of unbelief took hold either during or shortly after the main battles. An example is the fate of a holy world called Annunciation, a planet famed for its grand cathedrals and reliquaries of Imperial saints. Typhus chose this pious world for a particularly cruel demonstration. After the planet's defenders were defeated, Typhus enacted a ritual to consecrate the ground to Nurgle. When relief forces arrived weeks later, they found Annunciation silent. Entire pilgrim cities were filled with shuffling congregations of the dead, still dressed in their robes, clutching rusted icons of faith as they gnawed on the bones of the fallen. The shrine basilicas had become charnel houses. The grand altar of the planet's primary cathedral was found drenched in gore, with hundreds of plague zombies kneeling in mock prayer, as if parodies of the faithful they once were. Typhus had literally desecrated the holy world by turning its own piety-poisoned citizens into an undead army. It said the cleansing teams sent by the Inquisition had to use flamers until the stone walls cracked from heat, and still they remained unsure if any hidden catacombs of undead were left behind. Another unsettling case occurred on the frontier planet of Gehöft, where a minor demonic incursion erupted seemingly at random. Alongside the gibbering lesser demons that spilled into reality, there came mass shambling ranks of plague zombies. The warp breach apparently let both demons and the zombie curse through simultaneously. The unlucky PDF troops found themselves fighting not just nightmare creatures from the Immaterium, but also the reanimated bodies of their own townsfolk. Surviving records indicate Gehöft's defenders were overrun within days, the entire planet falling dark as a carnival of plague and demons danced through its habdomes. Only much later, when the warp storms receded, did the Imperium attempt to investigate. By then, nothing remained but ghost cities and piles of bones picked clean. These incidents underscore how the curse of unbelief became an interstellar menace. And then, as if matters weren't dire enough, reality itself cracked. In the wake of Cadia's destruction, the Imperium was split by a colossal warp storm, the Great Rift, which tore across the galaxy. With the Great Rift's appearance, the influence of chaos dramatically expanded everywhere. No corner of the Imperium was truly safe from warp-spawned phenomena, and that included the spread of the zombie plague. It was as if a floodgate opened. Where once the zombie plague was largely confined to regions near the Eye of Terror, or under active assault by Nurgle's forces, now it began popping up across all sectors. Worlds that had never heard of such a thing suddenly found themselves fighting the risen dead. Even more concerning, the plague itself mutated. The raw chaos energy permeating the galaxy led to new strains and stranger infection vectors. In some reports, people have succumbed to the curse without any direct physical contact, no bite or scratch, seemingly infected by intense fear or nightmares given form. Tales spread of Vox broadcasts carrying a psychic contagion that induced despair in listeners, leaving entire hab blocks as easy prey for the curse. Other accounts mention plague outbreaks that coincided with no obvious carrier, leading some inquisitors to theorize that under the Great Rift's glare, even a moment of absolute hopelessness in a person's mind could invite a demonic virus to take root. It sounds fantastical, but after what the galaxy has seen, few dismiss these possibilities outright. The curse of unbelief had always been a disease of the soul as much as the body. Now, with the barriers between the Immaterium and real space torn wide, that spiritual aspect grew only more potent. One prominent result of these changes was the emergence of the creatures known as Poxwalkers. Poxwalkers are, in many ways, the next generation of plague zombie, a twisted fusion of undead and mutant, spawned by what Nurgle's followers call the Walking Pox. Initially encountered in the wake of the Great Rift, Poxwalkers differ from the classic plague zombie in that their bodies undergo extreme warp-fueled mutations even after death. Victims of the Walking Pox become frothing, plague-crazed zombies, similar to before. But as they remain animated, they start sprouting grotesque features. Horns bursting through skulls, extra eyeballs, tentacles and bony spikes ripping out of limbs. They resemble plague zombies that are slowly transforming into chaos demons. In fact, many note their similarity to Nurgle's lesser demons, the Plague Bearers. This is not entirely surprising. Some inquisitorial savants speculate that the Walking Pox is actually a variant of Nurgle's Rot, the demon plague that turns its victims into Plague Bearer demons, modified to create not a demon but an enhanced undead slave. Poxwalkers are often found accompanying Death Guard forces during Nurgle's campaigns in the current era, serving as shock troops. Imagine the worst of both worlds, an undead horde, but now some of them might be charging at you with unnatural speed, or shrugging off damage as their bodies knit and change, or impaling soldiers on newly grown spines. They giggle and babble with crazed joy even as they murder, as if delighting in the gifts Nurgle has bestowed on them. To the beleaguered defenders of humanity who were already hard-pressed to handle regular plague zombies, the appearance of poxwalkers is a fresh nightmare. There are reports from the Dark Imperium era of entire Astra Militarum regiments breaking and fleeing at the sight of a horde of a few hundred poxwalkers, so foul and terrifying was their aspect. In summary, by the dawn of the 42nd millennium, the curse of unbelief has evolved and spread to become a constant, lurking threat across the galaxy. From the richest hive worlds to the most distant frontier colonies, none can truly sleep easy if despair and chaos are near. The zombie plague can depopulate worlds, topple armies, and turn a quiet city into a charnel house within days. It is a weapon for those who serve destruction, and a punishment for those who falter in their faith. Faced with such an inexorable menace, what can humanity do but fight to survive and hope for the Emperor's light to hold out? Fighting the curse. Confronted with the horror of the zombie plague, the Imperium has been forced to adapt in various ways. Officially, knowledge of the curse of unbelief is kept somewhat restricted. The average planetary citizen is not going to learn about it until it's on their doorstep. Hearing too much about it might spread panic, which ironically only makes people more vulnerable to it. However, in the higher echelons of Imperial Command and the Inquisition, the threat is well known and taken very seriously. Over the centuries, specialized protocols and organizations have been developed to combat this plague. One of the foremost of these is the Ordo Sepulturum, a minor branch of the Holy Inquisition. While the Inquisition's main bodies, the Ordo Hereticus, Xenos, and Malleus, deal with witches, aliens, and demons respectively, the Ordo Sepulturum was founded specifically to address the growing problem of chaos-born undead outbreaks. These inquisitors and their acolytes are sometimes grimly nicknamed the Corpse Hunters, or Plague Doctors, by their peers. They are tasked with investigating any sign of the curse containing outbreaks and studying the plague to glean any advantages. It's not a prestigious assignment. Ordo Sepulturum agents find themselves trudging through plague-infested war zones, performing autopsies on rotted cadavers, or hunting down a lone infected patient zero in some backwater town before an epidemic can bloom. But their work has saved countless lives and undeaths. For instance, after the Hydra Minoris disaster, Ordo Sepulturum agents made sure that any ship or life pod that might have left the planet was traced and intercepted. This prevented secondary outbreaks on nearby worlds. In one case, an inquisitor of this Ordo deliberately allowed himself to be bitten and then secluded himself under observation, sacrificing his own life to provide live data on the infection's progression and thus confirming the timeline of stages and when a victim becomes contagious. His heroic self-experiment ended, of course, with his acolytes incinerating him the moment he turned. Another tactic in fighting the plague is surprisingly simple: maintaining morale and faith. Recall that the curse of unbelief cannot easily infect those who possess strong hope or devotion. It preys on the spiritually defeated. Imperial authorities have used this fact as a tool. During times of plague threat, ecclesiarchy, priests, and commissars alike work double time to inspire, cajole, or terrorize the populace into keeping the faith and resisting despair, rousing sermons, public rallies of defiance, draconian punishment for defeatist talk. All are employed to shore up the mental defenses of the people. It's a brutal sort of psychological vaccination. Instill faith through any means necessary, because to lose hope is literally to invite damnation. There is perhaps dark humor in this. The Imperium has always demanded unyielding faith from its subjects, and here is a disease that makes that demand a matter of life and death. As a result, one of the standard advisories in any suspected plague situation, quietly included in administratum memos, is increase the level of Imperial Creed propaganda immediately. An inspired citizen might still die in many horrible ways, but at least they won't rise again to eat their neighbors. On the more practical front, Imperial military forces have standing orders on how to deal with potential plague zombie scenarios. Medics carry fast-acting toxins to euthanize any soldiers showing late-stage symptoms. Promethium stockpiles, for flamers, are kept in reserve whenever Nurgle's forces are known to be in theater. Sniper units are briefed to target any unusual movement among corpses. Perhaps most importantly, commanders are authorized to enforce severe quarantine measures. This can mean sealing off sections of a hive city, even ordering extermination bombardment on infected zones, if that's what it takes. It's harsh, but necessary. If a single escape shuttle from Hydra Minoris had slipped past the blockade, for instance, the plague might have spread to a dozen other worlds and killed trillions. No one understands better than the Imperium's leaders that when dealing with this curse, you cannot hesitate to make sacrificial calls. In space, the Navy has its own protocols. Any ship known or suspected to be infected is immediately isolated. Boarding teams sent to sanitize such ships are effectively on suicide missions. Armed with flamers and void-hardened hazmat suits, they'll sweep through flickering corridors, torching reanimated crew members and venting compartments into the vacuum. If the situation looks too far gone, standard procedure is to scuttle or destroy the entire vessel, rather than risk it ever docking somewhere and unleashing death. Many a proud Imperial cruiser or merchant freighter has been deliberately consigned to the void, along with all hands, due to a single contaminated crewman showing the telltale signs of graying skin and bite marks. Better to lose one ship now than an entire planet later. Amidst these grim defensive measures, the Ordo Sepulturum and allied tech priests have also pursued an intriguing line of research. Could the curse of unbelief hold the key to some greater good? This is a heretical thought to many, but some inquisitors, particularly those of the Thorian philosophy, argue that understanding how the plague reanimates the dead might unlock secrets to preserving life through the warp. The rationale is admittedly fascinating. The Emperor of Mankind himself is a dying corpse kept alive by a continuous miracle of techno-sorcery on the Golden Throne. The zombie plague, in a perverse way, also preserves a semblance of life in dead tissue via warp power. If one could isolate what makes the plague tick without its destructive side, perhaps one could create a so-called faith virus. A sanctioned holy version that could sustain a loyal servant's life beyond death, or even revitalize the Emperor. It sounds like science fiction, but in the halls of certain inquisitorial conclaves, such radical ideas have been seriously debated. Results so far? Catastrophic failure. Every attempt to tinker with the plague's essence, to bend it toward a beneficial end, has resulted in ghastly mutations or new dangers. One Magos biologist created a prototype serum intended to grant an Imperial hero the regenerative undeath of a zombie without the loss of mind. The test subject, instead, sprouted tentacles from his face and had to be euthanized when he started reciting Nurglite scripture in reverse. Another experiment tried using fragments of saintly relics and a sample of the plague, hoping the holy energy would neutralize the chaos. The result was a strain of infection that actually animated the skeletal remains of the long-dead saint, a literal skeleton warrior that attacked everyone in the lab before crumbling. After incidents like these, most agree that trying to domesticate or sanctify the curse of unbelief is folly. It is anathema to life and hope by its very nature, and any attempt to use it for good is like trying to train a demon host to hug children. It's just not going to work out. The Thorians, however, quietly continue their research, convinced that in the plague lies some fragment of the Emperor's own immortality. The debate, no doubt, will rage on as humanity grows ever more desperate for a way to keep the God Emperor's light from fading. Conclusion. The story of the curse of unbelief is a chilling reminder of the darkness that humanity faces in the 41st millennium and beyond. It is a plague of despair in the most literal sense, turning the loss of faith into a living horror. For those who suffer under its shadow, it is hard to imagine a fate more cruel. To see your loved ones transform into monstrosities, to feel your own body decay while your mind drowns in sorrow, and finally to become a mindless puppet of the warp, forced to defile everything you once held dear, in a universe filled with ravenous aliens, rogue AI, and bloodthirsty demons. It is in some ways this quiet, creeping curse that truly showcases how fragile the line between hope and annihilation can be. Yet, amidst the bleakness, the Imperium endures. On countless worlds, when the sirens wail and the dead begin to shuffle, there are those who stand firm, Incinerator in one hand and an Aquila in the other, determined to send the plague back to the hell it crawled from. The Battle Sisters, who purify a hive city with cleansing flame, chanting hymns as each corpse burns. The Inquisitor, who gives his own life to ensure an entire sector is inoculated with hard-earned knowledge. The simple civilians, who choose to believe, to hope against all odds, denying the curse its foothold. These, too, are part of the tale. Every plague zombie stalks the darkness. But every torch of faith held aloft pushes that darkness back, if only a little. The curse of unbelief has no grand intellect or goal. It is pure malevolent consequence. It will never negotiate or relent. It will simply exist wherever despair is found, until either nothing remains or hope triumphs. As citizens of the Imperium, perhaps the greatest weapon against it is to cling to that which it cannot abide. Belief. Belief in the Emperor, in each other, in a better tomorrow, however faint. For in the end, as long as humanity refuses to yield to despair, the curse can never claim us all. In the saga of mankind's future, the zombie plague is a dark chapter indeed. But it is not the final one. As this documentary draws to a close, remember the warning and the lesson etched in blood and fire on beleaguered worlds. Burn the dead. Do not lose faith. The curse of unbelief feeds on our surrender. So we do not surrender. We fight, for as long as one human heart still beats with hope, even death itself will have to wait.